From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Folsom, California.
Noe Valley.
Village in the Park in Daly City.
I live in Bernal Heights.
Coming up, San Francisco officials ask a wary public to trust them as they search for their next police chief.
It's not rigged. It's not rigged. Can I say that one more time? It's not rigged.
Then author Mary Roach tells us about her new book, Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War.
I mean, you can imagine if your mission is to go in and get Osama bin Laden and you're hit with extreme gastrointestinal urgency. It's kind of a mission fail scenario.
And we'll hear some of the secrets behind Mary's reporting technique.
I want to travel all the way to Djibouti to write about diarrhea, which would flag me as a weird person.
We're bringing it all out into the light today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. San Francisco is looking for a new police chief, but finding the right one is complicated. Activists, politicians, and police union members all have opinions. And the last chief, Greg Suhr, resigned under pressure after citizen activists protested several officer-involved shootings. Officials want a replacement who can help restore public trust. But the same people who helped force Chief Suhr's resignation are wondering, will their voices still matter? Or will the police union have the last word? KLW's justice reporter Holly J. McDeed has the story.
Inside St. Mary's Cathedral, in San Francisco's Western Addition, around 50 people are gathered to tell the city's police commissioners what qualities they want in their next police chief. Police Commission President Susie Loftus stands in front of one group, arranged in a circle around her. People raise their hands, and like a teacher, she calls on them for answers.
Yes, ma'am.
One that doesn't judge you off your appearance?
Yes.
This is just one of five meetings held around the city to help the Police Commission sort through the 61 candidates that applied for the job. The commission will forward the names of up to three finalists to the mayor, who has the final say. As people shout out characteristics they think are important, the room turns into a cacophony of ideas and voices.
African-American woman.
They said a law degree?
The military, an ex-military person.
Others don't just want a new police chief. They want a new police department, or at least a completely new search process.
There are many of us, and there's many of news articles that have spoken to the fact. A lot of us believe that this is basically a sham.
Commissioner Thomas Mazzucco calls for order.
Excuse me. Everybody calm down. I want you to stop you for a second. How would you feel if an officer spoke to you the way you just spoke to her?
Tony Chaplin already has the blessing of the POA. He already has the blessing of the mayor.
I'd be very surprised if I followed what people told me to do.
The POA is the San Francisco Police Officers Association, as in the city's police union. Tim Redmond, editor and founder of the magazine 48 Hills, has been watching police chiefs rise and fall for decades now. He says the public can shout all they want, but the police union is the voice that really matters. The union says they want an insider, a cop's cop, who has risen through the ranks. And almost every time, that's exactly what they get.
With only two exceptions in the last half century, police chiefs in San Francisco have been chosen from within the department. They've been promoted from within. And one could certainly argue, and I have argued, that that is one of the reasons that we have this climate of trouble in the police department.
The police union has pulled out the big bucks for past political campaigns. And if the mayor were to ignore the group that represents over 2,000 police officers, he could face financial and political consequences. And 4 out of 7 of the police commissioners are appointed by the mayor. So what he wants matters.
Commissioners who defy the mayor's will end up losing their jobs on commissions. That's just how it is.
But things are different now. Black Lives Matter didn't exist back in 2011. That year, the commissioners brought in an insider so inside the union called him their native son, former Chief Greg Suhr. Without police accountability groups like the Frisco Five hunger strikers demanding his resignation, Suhr might still be in charge.
And it was the thousands and thousands of people in the streets following the mayor everywhere, demanding that he fire the chief.
You could have a new chief, a former chief, or any kind of chief in that chair. But if the policies that govern the department don't change, then it doesn't matter. So for me, that's always been the most important thing.
Police Commission member Joseph Marshall says he wants what the community wants, a chief who can help reform the department. But some activists, like members of San Franciscans for Police Accountability, want proof and have demanded to see the names of the final three candidates, to peek inside the brains of the commissioners to see if the process has been rigged.
Yeah, nobody's rigged anything.
But is there a way to prove that somehow? People
no.
have been...
No. How can I prove it? What do you want? What proof do you what folks want? It wasn't rigged. I'm telling you, it's not rigged. I just told you where to go.
And when he picks the final three candidates the commission will forward to the mayor, he wants to be away from the voices of the community, too.
What's the real community, the fake community, this community, that community? We represent this, they represent, No. Everybody's got an opinion about everything. Let's put it in the hands of the commission. For me, put it in that. And I don't want that filtering into that room.
But some of those voices are harder to filter out than others. Chinatown political powerhouse Rose Pack has thrown her weight behind San Francisco Deputy Chief Garrett Tom. Officers for Justice, an organization representing African American and other non-white officers, sent a list of suggestions to the police commission. It included insiders like Tony Chaplin and big-name reformers from the outside, like former Philadelphia Chief Charles Ramsey. And police union president Martin Halloran is featured in a new radio ad.
While the Police Officers Association was disappointed in the politically forced retirement of Chief Greg Suhr, we were encouraged by the hiring of Interim Chief Tony Chaplin. The residents of our city deserve a leader of the SFPD who has talked the talk and walked the walk. Chief Tony Chaplin is the right leader at the right time.
Back at the meeting room, community members are trying to get their voices into the mix. Commissioner Thomas Mizuko swears he's listening.
You will play a role in our decision, I promise you. I give you my promise, my word.
You will trust us. We will be in
And in return, community activists promise the commissioners that they aren't going away either. With that, the meeting is over. The application period has closed. In the next few months, the commissioners will forward three names to the mayor. There's no firm timeline, but a new chief could be in place by January 2017. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly J. McDeed.
Let us know your thoughts on the search for a new SF police chief. Write us at justice@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Author Mary Roach is prolific. Since 2013, she's written best-selling books about cadavers, sex, ghosts, the digestive tract, and space toilets. Her latest book is called Grunt, and it delves into the very specialized science of modern combat.
Things like extreme heat and huge loads and flies, all of the things that make being a soldier really difficult and grueling. So there's a lot of science that goes into maybe making it a little less grueling.
Mary lives and works in Oakland, where she shares an office with our very own Julie Kane. The two sat down to talk about the science of diarrhea and the amazing access she got reporting on the military.
I was amazed by the access that you got in this book. I mean, really, you got to go everywhere. It was incredible. Why do you think people were so open to having you around?
Well, I think that the military is more transparent than people think. I think that if you ask them a question, they answer it, and unless it's classified, and then they don't. You know, I would contact like this woman who did public affairs for a research lab, a Navy lab, and I'd say, what else is going on? And she mentioned a few things, and there was a diarrhea researcher, and I said, oh, that sounds interesting. What is he doing? And she said, well, it has to do with diarrhea and special operations because they get higher rates, and he's traveling to these places. And I said, oh, I'd like to go with him and report on this. And I think I probably said, like, infectious disease. I kind of made it sound a little bit better than, like, I want to travel all the way to Djibouti to write about diarrhea, which would flag me as a weird person.
There's a great scene, actually, in that visit you made where you're in a cafeteria scoping out special ops people you want to talk to about diarrhea in the field. Can you tell me a little bit about that story, what you did and why?
Sure. Well, at Camp Le Menier, the special ops people, they're off in it's called the restricted zone, and so I couldn't go in there to talk to them. They only come out to eat. So they come, my only chance to strike up a conversation with one of these rather intimidating men was over dinner. And the topic is, of course, diarrhea. So I was sitting with the public affairs guy, Seamus, who was a very sweet guy. I'm like, Seamus, he kind of looks around this huge dining facility and he's like, there's your guy over there in the corner. You know, and it is like the biggest, scariest, bearded, shaved head guy sitting alone.
Right.
I said, Seamus, you have to introduce me. This is your job. I can't just walk up to this guy. He's like, oh, Mary, they didn't train us on this in public affairs school. And he was nervous, too. He's like, how do we? Oh, I don't know. You know, and he's stalling. I'm like, you have to hurry up because these guys eat fast. I know that's part of their training. They eat and they leave. You know, and Seamus is peeling his orange. And then he starts wiping his fingers one by one. I'm like, come on, hurry up. What are you doing? He goes, well, I'm going to shake his hand. I don't want to be, I got the orange on me. And he'll kill me. He'll go, you got me sticky. So we walk across the dining facility like nervous fifth graders at a dance. And this guy sees us coming and he doesn't smile. And Seamus is like, oh, hello, I'm Seamus. And the guy doesn't even let him finish, says, I'm done. I'm leaving. And then I thought, I just have to launch into this. I'm like, well, actually, I'm a writer. I'm here writing about blah, blah, blah. And I have a chapter on diarrhea. And I know this sounds like a silly topic. And he goes, it's not. You're welcome to sit down.
Why is diarrhea something a lone wolf special ops guy done with his meal, something that will make him sit down and talk to a strange lady about?
Because I think 70% of people who served in Iraq or Afghanistan have gotten food poisoning. The rates are twice as high among special operations because they're out in a village eating goat that hasn't been refrigerated and water that hasn't been treated or filtered. So they get hit all the time. And you can imagine if your mission is to go in and get Osama bin Laden and you're hit with extreme gastrointestinal urgency, it's kind of a mission fail scenario. So that's why we were there. And I was just interested in hearing stories about situations where something that seems like a tee-hee topic it can be a matter of life and death.
Okay, so there's this phrase that you wrote in your book that I just love so much, the unpretty facts of biology. And I feel like that's kind of your beat.
Yeah.
Can you talk about tell me a little bit about why you are so drawn to the unpretty facts of biology?
I think because everybody is put off by the unpretty facts of biology, all of the bodily fluids, and so they tend to look away. And so they're missing out on a lot of really fascinating science. You know, with diarrhea, there's this sense people have like, oh, you don't want to ever take Imodium because your body, the reason you have diarrhea is your body is flushing the toxins and flushing things out. Well, actually, what I learned from Captain Riddle, the diarrhea researcher. In fact, diarrhea isn't something you're doing to the pathogens. It's something they're doing to you. They're interfering with your colon's, your intestine's ability to absorb water. And I remember saying to him, well, why? Why do they do this? He said, well, think about it. If you're an organism who's trying to spread yourself far and wide, diarrhea is going to get you a lot further than a little turd, so, you know, a compact, dry turd. So it makes sense evolutionarily. And that's so interesting. So I like to take people from like, ew, gross, to, oh, I get it. Wow.
I'm talking with Mary Roach. Her newest book is called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. You and I know each other. We share a workspace. We share this kind of workspace with a bunch of writers and radio producers. So we spend a fair amount of time around each other.
We do.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, anyway. Yes.
And me too. And yes. I think like one of the things that's so amazing to me about being in a workspace with you is that I think a lot about like how the creative process works, especially, you know, over time, when especially a long thing, but yeah. Actually with anything. That I just feel like I always descend into a dark night of the soul every single time.
Yes.
And you seem like you just like, oh, every 2 years, another book. Oh, here it is. Oh, I just wrote this book. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about it. That's what it seems like on that for me as an outsider to you.
Right.
I'm just wondering if you ever... Do you go through that kind of like, oh, I can't do this, so I'm a total fraud?
Totally, every single book. Every single book, there's a moment where I want to quit. I mean, I actually, for Packing for Mars, there was a period of time where the story in Japan fell apart. The story with the cadaver splashdown test was threatening to fall apart. Everything was collapsing, and I was at home, and my husband, he sees all this, you guys don't, but I'm like, you know what? I freaking quit. I just quit. I can't stand it. I can't stand it. And Ed goes, well, may I remind you, you go through this with every book, and 2 weeks later, things have worked out, and you figured something out. And he's always right.
So... I'm wondering if there's any souvenirs or artifacts that you have gathered, like you've kept from reporting.
Sure. I have a whole shelf in my office. It's kind of the Mary Roach Museum. I have from Stiff. I have one of those little eye caps. It looks like a contact lens from hell. It's got like, you know, those spikes that the rental car company don't back up. It's kind of like you pull the eyelid. It keeps the eye closed. So you would pull the eyelid down over... And it would not go back up because of the little, they're chads, really, is what they are. Mm. They're chads in a little plastic contact lensy thing. Mm. I have that. I have, what else do I have? Oh, from Gulp, I have a saliva collecting. It's a sort of like a tampon you chew on, and it absorbs the saliva, and it's in this little vial. I have that. I have...
Unpretty Facts of Biology.
Unpretty Facts of Biology. I have a little vial of air from the South Pole, the cleanest air in the world, that they hand out. The researchers down there hand it out. God, it's probably a half dozen other things. I'm trying to think what else from this book. Oh, in the trunk of the Subaru, there's an MRE, because they last about 25 years. So come the apocalypse, if we're stuck in the Subaru, we'll break open the MRE.
And you won't have enough toilet paper.
And we won't have enough toilet paper, yeah. I have lots and lots now, though, because I bought a box of the combat ration toilet paper packets, which are made in San Leandro, and I put little stickers that say grunt, which I thought was a lovely double entendre. And so I hand them out. I throw them to the crowd at book events.
I love reading your footnotes very much.
Good, because I love writing them.
Tell me what's the difference? Well, like, how does a footnote become a footnote rather than just part of the narrative?
Yeah, the footnotes are situations where I found something I love, and it's so great and surprising and weird. I can't leave it out of the book, but it doesn't really fit the narrative. It doesn't fit the explanation of the science or the narrative as it's happening. And if I put it in parentheses, it's really too much of a side trip for somebody to, it derails the flow. So I throw it at the bottom of the page. And if somebody wants to go there and then get their flow back, they can, or if they want to ignore it, that's fine too. So I don't feel I can really cram it in there, but I also can't bear to leave it out.
They are so great. I'm going to read the ones that I'm just going to read like three factoids that I got from footnotes. Okay. Number one, rabbit feces sells for $35 a gallon.
Uh-huh. Yes.
The Medicare reimbursement code for maggots.
That's right.
CPT 99070. And the military slang for you. Do you remember?
Yes. I'm a media puke. Or if they're feeling kinder, a pencil.
A pencil.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like media puke is a particularly apt descriptor for you, though.
A media
puke, you know, it's like,
Yeah, right, right. The puke is, yeah, I don't take offense. I don't mind being called a puke.
So tell me, like, are there ones that stick out to you? Are there ones from this book where you're like, man, I couldn't wait to get home and tell Ed about this?
My favorite footnote in the book is the one, because I'd been giving people some diarrhea statistics. And then I include in the footnote my own diarrhea statistic, which is made up, which is I'm saying there's a 94% chance that if you are talking to two diarrhea researchers, one of whom is a Captain Mark Riddle and the other is David Tribble, there's a 94% chance that you're going to screw up and call one or the other Dribble, which I did. It's really hard. Tribble and Riddle. It's going to come out as Dribble.
That was Mary Roach, author of the book Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. She spoke with KALW's Julie Kane. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.